Malcolm Honlein with us, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. It is time for the weekly update here on a Friday morning Erev Shabbos at JMA. And by the way, even though I'm away because Mayor and Avrami are going to be subbing for me Monday through Thursday of next week, we are planning on doing a Friday weekly update. I plan on being back Friday morning, and we'll conduct a weekly update, please God, next week as well. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Welcome back to you, and thank you. It's good to be back as well. I was in your favorite haunt, as you know, in the Inbal Hotel in Jerusalem, where they have plaques for you everywhere, but it was great, and I hope to everybody should be encouraged to go to Israel to visit, not to be afraid. They need to see us. They need to see people there in the streets and the stores. It's really part of our responsibility at this time.
You know, I saw a report this week, and I'm being serious about this, that airline prices have gone down over the last year here in the United States by a certain percentage. I forgot what it was. That has not seeped into the Israeli market yet, correct?
Well, that's why they can go down, because they're charging so much to go to Israel that they can lower the prices elsewhere.
All right, we got to go. Speaking of flights, we got to go around the world this morning. Lots of elections to speak about. We'll start with Iran. Is Masoud Pezeshkian, the brand new president of Iran, the actual reformist that he's being painted as in the worldwide media?
You're the first person who's asked me about this who actually knows how to pronounce his name. and even if you're wrong, nobody will know, so it's okay. But this is a very serious matter, because the world is trying to portray it, at least some, is a moderate. That's the term they use for him when he is anything but a moderate. He's more moderate than the guy he was running against. In essence, it's still the supreme leader who controls everything. We use him as a front to say, look, we elected a moderate. Now the West should him, and the West should, you know, encourage him, when in fact he's no different than the others. When it comes to the bottom line, he will say that he wants to lower the temperature and he wants to lower the restrictions on women's clothing. This is all a sham. Every expert and everybody who knows what's going on in Iran will tell you there is no difference here. He had to be approved as a candidate by the Supreme Leader and by the Council of Experts, and they eliminated thousands of candidates, you know, in these elections, came down to a few, and then in the runoff, it was between him and this hardline, quote hardline, though they all, so I don't anticipate that we'll see much of a change. They will try to put cosmetic to the fore, but in essence, the policy is the same. Iran remains as aggressive as ever. They've moved ahead with their nuclear program. The enrichment is expanding. Their support for their products, the Houthis are doing now every day, attacking ships, including this morning. They continue to provide them with the weapons, the rockets, even their most advanced rockets that they are firing at our ships, in the Western shipping and Eastern shipping, even attacking Chinese ships at times who are their close ally. But Iran is a way to destabilize the West, to humiliate the West. They continue with Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, with the militias in Syria, Iraq, putting more and more pressure on Jordan and sending weapons through Jordan to the West Bank at an increasing pace. And the Jordanians do try to counter it, but it's the amount of weapons that have been uncovered by Israeli troops in Yunin Shomron in the raids. And today, there may be as many troops any day in that area as there are in Gaza, because of the tremendous infrastructure. And had they preemptively there and continuously, we would have had a very different situation, with not a two-front war but a three-front war, one in the heartland of Israel. They can't eliminate attempted terrorist attacks, which continue, but thank God most are thwarted. But they found huge stockpiles of weapons and what manufacturing. And the infrastructure of terror there that is really remarkable.
One thing we did learn, and tell me if I'm right about this, because you know this much more deeply than I do, but I assume we did learn from this Iranian election that the people of Iran, they want the one who's painted as the more moderate, right?
For those who voted more for him. But the fact is that the vote was not as reported, not the first round where they said 40% voted, which is what they say in every election. It was probably closer to 12%.
Oh, gosh.
And in this election, it was even, may have even been lower. There were estimates that maybe 12 million out of 60 million potential voters voted. But the big demonstration was that people stayed home, number one. And number two, they didn't go out of their homes on that day, mm-hmm. as they were instructed by the opposition to Khomeini, who urged people to show the West the protest, not by going, because they can doctor the numbers at the polls, and you can be sure that nobody wins if the Supreme Leader doesn't want them to, right. but by showing all the streets in many cities were empty that day as a protest.
Then why did the Supreme Leader, you know, asking out of ignorance, why did the Supreme Leader allow the moderate to come out on top?
Because he wants to convince the West that they should be nicer to Iran, that they should not impose sanctions, that they should, quote, work with this guy because he's a more moderate supporter. In fact, It's the same policies, the same control, the same authority, and the same oppression, both domestically and aggressiveness abroad. So it's a sham, only meant to put a fake front on the realities of where Iran is today.
All right, as we continue the election special, what can you tell us about brand new British Prime Minister Keir Starmer?
So Starmer, the head of the Labour Party, and they've made a big deal of the fact that his wife is Jewish, and he said they make Kiddush and Avchala every Friday night, right. and it seems that they do observe and belong to a very liberal congregation in Britain. But it's also occasioned all sorts of conspiracy theories that it's a Jewish takeover and attacking his wife. But if you look at the cabinet itself, you see already that there are policy changes in the offing. We see that we've been talking about position on the international court, arms shipments, on other things that the Labour Party brings with it. Quite a few people who are very extreme and very left, even though Corbyn, who was elected, by the way, but not on the Labour Party. In addition, they have their own squad, six vehemently pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel candidates, although amongst the others, there are still many who are pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, I should say, which is anti-Palestinian, and certainly hostile to Israel. So I wouldn't say much good news. The question, will they really crack down on anti-Semitism in a serious way as they... Will they really, will they continue to tolerate it? Anti-Semitism in England, like everywhere else, has increased very dramatically. There are 1,000% increases in France and other countries, including England, over the past year since October 7th. And a study that came out this week, by the way, from the United Nations agency that was done before October 7th, that 96% of European Jews had experienced anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I believe that.
And England is no exception. So this election is not something that we can draw any comfort. I think that it's a great concern. The Conservatives clearly blew their opportunity. Blowing a snap election was wise decision.
Now, of course, we move to France, unlike Great Britain, where it's pretty clear who the new prime minister is. He's actually serving already. In France, a new Popular Front wins, Bardella and the National Rally lose. Some may think that you have to say that in a more nuanced fashion. You'll let us know about that. But also the confusion, at least from this standpoint, who the next president, and more importantly, because I think there's even more confusion about this, who the next prime minister is in France. What could you tell us about that election?
That it is confusing. And that I think Macron will remain They will make a coalition with this, unfortunately, very left party. The party of Le Pen, which won in the first race, the first round, and because of that really mobilized all the opposition parties to come together and to elect a majority that certainly, again, a big mistake to have a snap election. The results are very disturbing and will provide a government that I think will increasingly hostile to Israel and the...
Who was it that they said, was it Melenchon? One of them said that they're going to recognize the state of Palestine immediately.
Melenchon, who is an extreme guy and is openly hostile, and said that they would recognize Palestinian state as one of the first actions. They also talked about the International Criminal Court. They've talked about changing positions on France already, I think, limits arms sales. But to Israel, but I think we can anticipate a change. We don't have friendly governments, by and large, in Europe. Geert Wilders in Holland is a very right-wing party, but he is very supportive of Israel. I think that the immigration issue will not be addressed by these parties in a serious way, which means Europe is just compounding the doom that awaits it.
And they seem to be doing it with great intent. At least that's what it looks like from the Macron standpoint. But I don't know. Some of these things are unfathomable, frankly. And then, of course, there's a United States election. And even though it wasn't an official campaign event last night, I think it's interesting to analyze for those of us who care about Israel, some of the presentation by President Biden at the press conference last evening. When asked about the situation in the Middle East, he went out of his way to speak about, in interesting terms, the war cabinet in the Knesset and the government of the state of Israel. He mentioned the right-wing government of the state of Israel, never ever mentioned anything about the hostages, which of course includes Americans, and never said the word Hamas. What do you think of his of the Middle Eastern portion of the press conference last night?
So, by the way, I just wanted to add on the Europe thing. I think it only is going to underscore the Aliyah that we already see developing, and people were coming already to Israel, recognizing the reality that we have discussed on this show for a long time. And I think American Jews better look at the same thing, and given all the information that has been coming out, and I hope we could discuss about the nature of the foreign interventions and the failure to address what is happening in our own communities, not only in our campuses and our communities, the rise of anti-Semitism, the number of attacks, the fact that the vast majority of American Jews also say they've experienced anti-Semitism. Yeah. And there was very little comfort in the remarks of President Biden. Obviously, the major thing there was to see if he could get through the hour and, you know, only a few flubs, including Vice President Trump. Yeah. He did make a reference to bringing the hostages back, but the order in which he says, and the fact that he didn't have condemnation for virtually any but other country, I think for Putin and for China hardly, but Israel, to talk about the extreme war cabinet, the most extreme, and to talk about his toughness with Israel, I mean, that's really quite disturbing. And boasting about holding up to 2,000-pound bombs. Now, supposedly the 500-pound bombs have been released but it takes a long time till they actually get the shipment going. And many other weapons are being held up, as the Prime Minister has indicated, and the criticism. But I think it was an expression of frustration at the fact that most of the necessary weapons that Israel buys from the United States, and there aren't multiple for them, have been held up, delayed, or denied over some for months. So it's, I think that the remarks by the president yesterday and the idea that the war has to stop now, well, not all the goals have been achieved. We have not, and he talked about giving authority to remove Sinwar and all of that. He has not been removed. The much of the leadership remains, even though estimated 60% of the terrorists of Hamas infrastructure is gone, including their fighters. And when you hear the numbers, understand that they make up the bulk of the people. And these have been targeted hits, sometimes very up close, which is why the death toll of Israeli soldiers has risen also. Yeah. But the I think that if people were looking for messages of encouragement there, it was scant.
Yeah, it's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app. Malcolm Honlein is with us. Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. Yeah, nothing encouraging, as you just pointed out. And by the way, one other thing, you just mentioned anti-Semitism in terms of how it relates to those of us here in the United States. You've always told us, and this is not, you know, this is literally documented, whatever happens in Europe eventually comes to the U.S. I mean, that's, you know, that's the progression of things, especially if American governments behave the same way that French and British governments are behaving, et cetera, in terms of immigration, other things, et cetera. With that being said, one had to have been frightened beyond belief at the rallies, demonstrations, and violence that took place in France after the election. And if you want to get an idea, I don't want to, I hope it doesn't happen after this one, because frankly, I don't, if Trump or Biden wins, I have a feeling there may be, you know, demonstrations erupting all over the place in this country. But if you want an idea of what's going to be happening down the road, especially as the population of those who love, you know, Hamas and hate Jews continues to rise in this country, that's what it's going to look like. And just like, you know, robberies, muggings, rapes and murders of Jewish people, you know, often are dealt with a bit differently in those countries, that same attitude is going to end up coming here. So, you know, not just reiterating your point about everyone here should also consider what obviously French and British Jews are strongly considering and acting on right now.
So, first of all, the demonstrations were riotous, dangerous, and certainly a message that was not lost. And the authorities seem to even lose control. But that has been true here and in Britain and in other places. And we can anticipate next week at the Republican convention, and we have evidence that the same parties that organized on our campuses and in communities, the increasingly violent demonstrations against Israel, even though most of the participants have no clue what they were demonstrating about, and what the stakes are and what the words that they used meant. There are going to be very strong demonstrations there, but even more so at the Democratic National Convention, where they will try to replicate the impact of 1968. And we know and have evidence of what they're planning for the campuses again in September.
Oh, boy.
One of the things that we found, there's evidence that is that PFLP has been involved in organizing in some of the communities, including in Los Angeles, the demonstration that very dangerous and violent demonstration, Palestinian Front for the Liberation, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine people were involved. And even though their role in the Middle East seems to be greatly diminished, they seem to play a bigger role here. We know that foreign funding, I've talked about the Qatari funding and billions of dollars that they have funded the operations, not only hundreds of billions spending on businesses and buying into America, but at least $6.5 billion that we've found invested in the campuses, in public schools, in nurseries, in high schools, and resulting in a more and more hostile atmosphere in public schools, that parents are looking for schools, alternative schools for their children, and there aren't enough room, there isn't enough room in a lot of the cities for in their day schools, and new programs of building satellite schools and other things are being considered to meet the demand. Israeli universities, by the way, are starting courses in English because many students don't feel comfortable in the campuses here for good reason. So I anticipate that we're going to see also much more. The demonstrations are not going to stop. The crackdown by the university is meaningless if they allow the people to come back. If they judge the courts, you know, give them a revolving door for justice for those who violate and are engaged in this activity. We can look at Europe and somehow distance gives you clarity, but it's a lot harder when you see the thousands and thousands of incidents. I saw in Canada documented 5,000 incidents since October 7th. The numbers here are equally great. We have a lot of friends. We have members in Congress. There are 6 pieces of legislation. Unfortunately, they're not getting out and they're not being acted upon. And we heard the president's plan, you know, demanding every agency come forward with a plan to fight anti-Semitism, yet we haven't seen, and a year ago, the plans implemented and what changes really are taking place and how the Department of Education in particular is enforcing it. They have investigations, I know, at many universities, but the results are what is important, yeah. And holding the universities to account and responsibility we all have. We have to continue to keep the pressure on the universities, donors, alumni, students, faculty. We have to stand by Jewish faculty who are increasingly coming under pressure in public schools and in universities across the country. And many have resigned. Many Jews tell me that it's impossible for them to stay in the circumstances that they find in, that obtain there today, the violent, the hostile atmosphere that's been allowed to be created. And I think that's true for the chancellor of the New York City Education Department also has not really acted in a stringent and strong enough way to clean up the act in the universities and the fact that you had maps in high schools in New York City, huge maps with Palestine but no Israel, was a small indicator of what's really happening.
There's also an underlying attitude that continues to run in the background of those of us in the Jewish community in the United States, and that is that it can't happen here. Like, the U.S. is different. And the reality...
It is happening here.
Of course.
It is happening here. And I look, we've talked about this for so many years, and I know a lot of listeners and people in my speeches, you know, come to me and say, oh, you know, you're giving us a negative message. I said, no, it's a positive message when you know what's going on. You're empowered to act. When you don't know, ignorance, that is depressing. And what I find still is that people are not willing to face up to the reality of what's happening here. It's the same as in Europe. It seems the mentality that, and I'm not saying all the situations are parallel. They're not. There are places where you've had people act really strongly, and you've had the mayor has come out strongly against it. The police department says they're acting against it. But we have to look at the bottom line. Yep. What's happening with the arrests? What's happening with the firings on the campuses? Yep. You know, removing a president is an important symbol, but it's not a solution. And we have to have real solutions, and the donors stopping giving is impactful. The legislation should pass, and I hope that Senator Schumer and the leaders in the Senate will make sure that all these bills pass, hopefully before the recess, but maybe even just some of them, to give us further empowerment to fight anti-Semitism in all its manifestations.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, you know, I mean, obviously we didn't speak last week, so I'm going to go back to an old news story, but it was of great concern to people tuned in. What do you think of the release by Israel of the Al-Shifa Hospital director?
What's interesting to me is how everybody shifted responsibility, not uncommon there these days. And I think symbolically it was a mistake, because Shifa Hospital was a base of operation, as was disclosed by the Israeli raid there, and the criticism of Israel, which turned out to be, again, unfounded, like most of the accusations about bombing schools, et cetera. They hit a school that, number one, was empty, but under which was a huge operation, as they found in Khan Yunis, for an instance, in the behind, underneath the city hall was a big tunnel, which had been a gathering place for consultation place for the Hamas leadership, and it went into the UNRWA school, which was right next door. And we know that UNRWA staff and others have been involved in the terrorist activities, and more are identified by Israel for their having been involved with the Hamas and even some in the October 7th outrage. So the release the hospital director, ostensibly because they said they can't keep them all there, they didn't have enough room, it wasn't that humane, has not been sufficiently explained.
Yeah, I hear that. Hostage deal. He, meaning President Biden, alluded to it again last night. The whole ceasefire hostage situation, he seems to continue to rely or to lean on the original proposal he made a few weeks ago. I have no idea if that's still in play. What is now the attitude? Is the prime minister allowing negotiators to go back to the table? Is there a real prospect for a ceasefire/hostage deal? What's the update for today?
So the negotiations are going on. led by the head of Mossad. There are other negotiations led by the head of Shabak with the people participating from the United States, from other countries. The head of the CIA is out there negotiating. The Hamas now says that because Israel took these actions against terrorist operations, which they are permitted to do, even under the agreement that they are ready to reach, would not stop them from being able to respond when they discover terrorist activities. I mean, it's an excuse, but they do want, and it tells you the effectiveness, especially lately, where key operatives, both of Hezbollah and Hamas, have been eliminated. That is putting increasing pressure on Sinwar, and as they feel they're closing in on them, whether he's there or not, we don't know. But he certainly, I think there's a good chance that he's still in Gaza, but much of the leadership is, and they've been eliminating them one by one. I think that the talks are going on. I think everybody would like to reach an agreement. I'm sure Netanyahu would like to come to Congress with some sort of a preliminary agreement, at least, if not a deal. The administration certainly wants it before the election to be able to show that what they've done. I don't believe that it will relieve the pressure here at home and the anti-Semitic activities, because it's become too inbred, and they will find other excuses, because it's the existence of Israel that matters. And to remember that all of this is a front for the war against America, right, against Western democracy, against our values, that Israel is carrying the burden again and again for the West. And that was true in the past, and it's certainly true now. So the negotiations are going on. Everybody wants to see the hostages returned, those who are alive, and the bodies of those who are not. I think it's an imperative. In Israel, obviously, people feel very strongly about it. But when you look at the demonstrations, just remember what percentage of the population it is, and that and while they enjoy 100% support across the board, people are concerned that you make a deal that enables Hamas to walk out of this and claim a victory is not the administration or Congress or Israel want.
By the way, I mean, not to change the subject, but the big screen in front of me, which has the latest news, the number of Democratic members of the House of Representatives that are suggesting that that President Biden leave office, even with last night's press conference, continues to grow. What do you think? I mean, I would assume the Democratic Party going forward with their convention about 4 or 5 weeks away would prefer stability over chaos. Do you think there's a real shot he'll leave?
I don't think he'll leave, but I think that the pressure will continue to mount because the concern of the members of Congress and many others is that the impact on down-ticket candidates, meaning that if the people switch their votes to the Republican Party for the president, that they then tend to vote down the line. I think it's an underestimation. I think voters increasingly split the tickets, but the concern is that many members of Congress are worried, especially in more marginal districts, that they may not win, or that the people will stay home, right, which is another option that you hear, which also poses danger to them. So I think you're going to see a very enthusiastic response in Milwaukee, a sort of coronation of Trump. We're all waiting to hear who his vice presidential candidate will be. I think the mood in Chicago, the mood in at the Democratic convention is going to be more subdued. People are concerned. They, you know, it's the campaign takes a heavy toll. And the question also is, then, are you electing a second president, that the Biden couldn't last the 4 years? So they look at Kamala Harris, who actually does better against Trump by 1 or 2 points than Biden, and would beat him in the last poll, I think 49-47, which is margin of error. But I don't think people have confidence. Many of those people don't express confidence in the potential of her presidency. So it's a very confused situation. You know, we have a messy democracy, like Israel, like others. Democracy isn't always neat and orderly. But the fact that it's the internal tensions that are the major issue today, and will raise a lot of questions for people. I think the president somewhat diminish the criticisms that came out of the first debate, because he did handle the hour. He took the questions. He got most of the answers out, there were a few fluffs, but frankly, I don't think you can't say that he wasn't able to handle it,
right,
as they did after the debate.
Mr. Beebe comes to Washington on the brand new equivalent of Israel's Air Force One called Wing of Zion. Malcolm, you like the name or not?
It's perfectly all right with me.
I don't know. I think it could be more creative, frankly. I'll think over Shabbos and see if I come up with something better.
They could call it Air Force Ahud, but I think Wings of Zion has a poetic ring.
No, no question about that. There's something romantic about it, I'm sure. And when he comes here, by the way, you mentioned, of course, that he'll be here, and we expect him to speak on the 24th of July in Washington. Is there any shot? I mean, you mentioned, you know, he'd like to come with a hostage deal or the potential for one, and I'm sure there are other announcements he'd love to make. Is there any shot that he would announce further discussions with certain Middle Eastern countries, getting closer to an arrangement for peace or an arrangement for, you know, increased style? I mean, like a mini Abraham Accords type thing. Is it possible he might bring that to the table when he arrives, that there's been some type of diplomatic advancement in all of this with certain countries in the Middle East?
I don't think he has anything to announce in that regard. I did meet with him extensively last week when I was in Israel. We talked about many issues. The fact is that trade between Abraham Accord countries and Israel has continued to increase this year, contrary to what everybody's impression, because, you know, some withdrew ambassadors, but all the other things. The fact is that trade continued to increase. Now, are there difficulties? Yes. Do they are some very critical? Yes. I don't think that there is any breakthrough announcement to be made now, and I think that most countries would be concerned to have that happen because of domestic reaction, stimulated domestic reaction, because by and large they don't care about the Palestinians.
Right.
They resent the kleptocracy, they resent the violence, terrorism that has emanated from those communities, often against their countries, and I think and most of all the concern about Iran, which while on the verge of economic collapse, continues to be able to fund the military and the terrorist activities of their ring of fire around Israel, and the weapons that they've gotten to Hezbollah, you know, continues to show how much they have, how much is stockpiled at Beirut Airport. They say if Israel attacked Beirut Airport off of Beirut, that's how much weapons. How many weapons are stored there, and explosives and other kinds of things. But the bottom line is I think he will express optimism at the potential and the renewal and expansion of the Abraham Accords. I think he will talk about how, and this is not from him, but my imagination, that he will talk about how Israel is the front line for America, that it's the small the devil versus the great devil, as the Iranians put it, that this war is for Western democracy, it's Western values, it's freedom, it's the principles that for the United States, for Europe, and this is the front line. It's certainly front line for all these Arab countries, because they say it, and they don't want to see anything emerge out of this that leaves Hamas in power.
And some members of Congress will get it.
Some will get it. Many will not. I'm very concerned about the boycott, because that will become the story. You know, if right. 30, 40, 50 members don't come, I think if there's a deal, that will be diminished a lot. But I think without that, that will become the story, and the pressure on Israel will not diminish. I don't know whether it was wise or not to come. We'll find out the day after and discuss it that Friday.
Yeah, you may not have to wait till the day after. You'll find that on Twitter as it's happening. But but you're 100% right. Thank you so much. We'll speak, please God, next week. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Have a good Shabbos.
Malcolm Holmline, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, weekly update Fridays here at JMAM. Both Mayor Fertig and Avrami Finkelstein, I thank both of them, are subbing for me next week. I will be back, please God, Friday morning. So we will have a Friday morning show with a weekly update next week. That'll be right before BB's speech in Washington. It'll be the last weekly update before the 3 weeks. Make sure to be tuned in with us all through next week. Mayor and Avrami present amazing shows. And then I hope to be back Friday, please God, with hopefully an amazing show as well. Please God.